This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Hello, everyone. How are we doing? Steve, did you have a good weekend?
I have had a great weekend, actually. I can't believe it's actually over, though. Went by too fast.
We've got a fully loaded show for you guys tonight. Holy Kool-Aid is joining us for the first part, where we usually do Red Herring, and then we'll get to Godless Cranium and Pragmatic Culture. But hello, Holy Kool-Aid. You look a little animated and today.
Yeah, I am. So I'm muted.
Well, thought you were. Your lips were moving before you started speaking.
Oh, no, it was probably just tracking my mouth, and it saw me like smiling or something. But I have it set up through Adobe Character Animator, and I've been kind of giving this a try with live animation, and we'll see how it looks. If it looks bad, I can switch to my regular camera, and you can see my smiling mug instead.
That is so cool. I'm so jealous right now. I told you this the other day, but it looks like your character's been working out. You're getting buff.
Well, before, my character was a bit of a string, and I tend to try to work out a little bit in real life, so I didn't feel like it quite fit me, but
excellent.
I'm also tall, so I'm like stretched out. I'm like muscle on a rack.
For the Smoking Nun tonight, we're going to talk about, it's relevant to tonight's discussion. We'll go ahead to the next one, Dave. The theme of tonight is on the grand jury report that was released in August. And so what I wanted to do was kind of go through very quickly so that everybody's up to speed on what that report found. And then we're going to let Holy Kool-Aid explain how he is raising money for SNAP, which is a program that benefits some of the victims. So we'll go through this real quick, Dave. Next one. I'm going to go to the next one. So what they found was, you can go ahead to the next one, Dave, that 300 priests over the course of this investigation, go ahead to the next one, 1,000 victims, next one, over the span of 30 years, and go to the next one. And what they also found, the grand jury outlined 7 different steps in which the priests at this, or these few dioceses, would try to circumvent the law, I guess. And what they found was that for step one, they would make sure to use euphemisms rather than real words to describe sexual assaults in the diocese documents. So, for example, you would say you wouldn't say ever rape. You'd say inappropriate contact or boundary issues. Number two, they would assign fellow clergy members to ask inadequate questions and then make credibility determinations about the colleague with whom they live and work. So they would essentially assign somebody that would ask very light questions and not dive into it too deeply. Number three, they then found that these priests were sent to evaluations at church-run psychiatric treatment centers and would allow experts to diagnose the priest if it was a if he was a pedophile, based largely on their self-report. So it was very done in-house. Number four, when a priest does have to be removed, they don't say why. They tell the parishioners that he is on sick leave or suffering from nervous exhaustion, or they say nothing at all. Number five, even if a priest raping children, keep providing him housing and his expenses, although he may be using these resources to facilitate more. Step number six. Few were removed from priesthood to ensure that no more children would be victimized. Instead, they were transferred to other locations. And then the last thing that the grand jury found was that they had a policy of don't tell the police. It was to be handled more so in-house. And so we're going to be diving into things that kind of deal with this and how this is allowed to be happening tonight. So, Dave, you can go to the next slide. Let's talk about how, first of all, you could help if you can and if you're willing. So I'm going to turn it over to Holy Kool-Aid to let him let you know how that's possible.
Yeah, so there's an organization called SNAP that is, it's the survivors network of those abused by priests. They've been around for several decades now. They don't just deal with people who've been abused by Catholic priests. If you're a Jehovah's Witness or if you've been abused by a member of the clergy and Jehovah's Witnesses or a Muslim cleric or a Lutheran, it doesn't really matter the organization. Oftentimes what they find is that people who have gone through this kind of abuse, they'll blame themselves. They'll feel like they, you know, it's their word against God's. And there's not really a whole lot of recourse because a lot of times these religious organizations are extremely powerful. And sometimes they'll, you know, even have connections with people in government who want the support of the local religious organization. And so in order to be able to push back, the survivors of abuse, or I'd say abuse, I really should say rape in many cases, they come together and they share their stories. They have a website where you can not just tell your story, but they can give you counsel. They can show you where to get help, what to do if you're currently in a situation where you're being abused, what to do if you're seeking to, you know, file a lawsuit. And they're also the first people that the press goes to. So they do press releases. They'll tell the stories and tell the cases and stuff to the press to give more exposure to this so that more people feel comfortable coming out and sharing their story and not just blaming themselves and feeling like they're the person who's at fault here. And so it's a fantastic organization. It is a 501c3. It's a nonprofit, so all your donations to it are tax deductible. And they also have, on GuideStar, they have a Silver Star for transparency. And as far as organizations dealing with clergy abuse, like this is the go-to. So I've set up on GoFundMe a fundraiser. I call it Atheist Supporting Survivors of Clergy Abuse, just to show them that like we support them, you know, we care about them, we want them to get healing and justice, and to show that, you know, atheists are stepping up to really help them get the healing and justice that they deserve. So the fundraiser, I do not touch the money at all. It goes directly from GoFundMe to SNAP because SNAP is a certified charity in their system, registered through them. And so like it's completely transparent on that front. And so far we've raised $2,674. I had the goal set to $2,500, but when we hit it in like less than a week, then I bumped it up to $5,000, and I'm trying to get more YouTubers and podcasters involved, kind of growing a team of people to try to raise money. And the best part about it is when all of this was being leaked, the president of the Catholic League here in the U.S., Bill Donahue, he was coming out, and even while the Pope was apologizing and saying that it was scandalous, Bill Donahue was basically saying like, well, why are they singling us out? Why aren't they going after the public schools? You know, oh, it's just a homosexual subculture, blame it on the gays. And like, he was just really, really disgusting how he was whitewashing it and dodging and making excuses and oftentimes blaming the victims. And several years ago, he even called SNAP a phony victims group. And so once we raise all this money, I want the donation to be, it's going to be given courtesy of Bill Donahue. So like, imagine the look on his face when he finds out that, you know, a bunch of atheists gave $5,000 or $10,000 to the Survivors Network of those abused by Kreese in his name.
Excellent. I remember watching him in his debate with Christopher Hitchens several years ago. I mean, this has been a while back, and he's just a vile person. And you could tell back then he was that way. But I'll tell you what, if you'll send me or Steve the link to your team thing, we'll go ahead and slap it in the description now. So that way
absolutely. So the link, it's gofundme.com/fundraiser-4-snap, and I'll shoot you the link too, so you can put it in the YouTube description as well.
Excellent. Well, guys,
do you think there's been a lot of backlash from Donahue's trying to do whataboutism and trying to basically change the narrative and push it away from the actual crimes being committed? And he's trying to basically, as you said, whitewashed away. Have you seen any backlash for that?
I've seen a little bit just in, you know, if you watch, like, whenever he goes on like different TV shows and stuff, oftentimes those will get pushed to YouTube and you'll see like the reaction in the comment section. And it's almost 100% negative towards the Catholic Church. It's people who are saying, like, look, even the Pope is joking. But as far as backlash from the church or from, you know, the Catholic hierarchy, I haven't seen any negative stuff about Bill Donahue. In fact, when he called when he called SNAP a phony victims group, there was one cardinal that personally thanked him in a letter because SNAP was going after this cardinal. So it's you know, he's basically defending an organization that has been complicit in a lot of this horrible stuff. And, you know, so they're not gonna
defending them. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. I think we had a Holy Cool ADXE crash.
I think I lost my video.
That's cool. It's kind of flickering in now. Holy Kool-Aid, we appreciate you coming in and letting us know about where people can help. And guys, if you're able, please do check out that link. We'll have it in the description here in just a second. And we can try to hit that. Let's shoot for $10,000 courtesy of Bill Donahue. I think that's a good that's a good goal. So can you still hear us, Holy Kool-Aid?
I can. Sorry, my video crashed. So
that's okay.
Maybe the cartoon wasn't such a good idea.
It's still cool though. It was good to see you that way. And tell him to keep up the good work working out.
Thank you guys so much. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Thomas.
Absolutely. All right, we have one more slide that we're going to run through real quick. Dave, you can flip over to that last one. All right, so for tonight's discussion, we're going to try to aim for four questions and see if we can't dive into those. The first question is going to be, how did this happen? Then we'll talk about, are Catholics that continue to donate or tithe to the church, should they be considered complicit in what's happening now that they know that where some of those funds are being spent? Should the U.S. sanction or regulate the church, including revoking their tax exemption status? And then lastly, what now? What can we do to ensure that this doesn't happen again? So to discuss these questions and maybe more, we're going to say hello to Godless Cranium and Pragmatic Culture. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Hello. Thanks as well.
Hello there.
Sure. welcome back to both of you. It's been a long time since we've seen Godless Cranium. How long? It's been, I think the last one we did with you was the Cura questions.
Yes. Yeah, that was quite a while ago. When you had a few hundred subs, you're doing quite well now.
Yeah, I was looking back at that video. That was in the end of February, so I think we had like 300. So it has been a while since you. I go back and I look at the videos that we used to do to now, and some of the first ones with like me and Steve, and I know the guy that we did the Envision guy. Just watching this, it was cringe because I had a vertical video. Steve's over here on the other end. We've evolved quite a bit, I think, in that small amount of time.
Yeah, like, I think so too, but it's the content that matters anyway, so not really the visual.
Yeah. At this time, let's go ahead and let you guys introduce yourselves to everybody, let them know where they can find you if they want to see more, and I know that you guys do, and we'll start with Pragmatic Culture.
All right, cool. Thank you. Yeah, so I'm Pragmatic Culture. I mainly exist on Twitter, where I just shit out memes because it's low effort and easy to do. But other than that, you can find me on my YouTube channel, where I normally just host streams, and sometimes it's just me discussing some papers or some books I happen to have picked up. But I'm also running a series right now called Authoritarian to Different Ends, where I try to gather a range of different opinions from radical centrists to Fabian socialists. The main guest is usually a Ray Murasami, who's somewhat infamous on Twitter. And we just discuss various policy options for various issues facing us today and what our end goals will be. So if any of that interests anyone, come on by.
And just briefly, what's your stance on what happened with the Catholic Church, so we can get a feel of where you're coming from?
Yeah, sure. So first and foremost, no excuses here for what happened for all of the priests found guilty. I mean, you know, just fucking hang them from the buildings. It's that simple. There should be zero tolerance for that kind of thing, in my opinion, not only because of the actual act, but also for defaming the office in which they occupy. So this is a horrible, horrible thing. And for all those found guilty, the harshest punishments possible. And it's always, you know, it's harmful on two levels when this happens, not only because it's harmful to, of course, the victims, and they are our first concern, but this just, of course, you know, it does damage the image of the church because the media has a tendency to focus on this thing with a laser point precision, more so than it would of similar incidents happening in other institutions. And so we just have to watch our backs that much more when it comes to this type of thing. But of course, you know, all concern goes to the, I'm seeing someone in the chat say, bring back flogging, which, yeah, that's not a bad punishment either. But yeah, of course, harshest punishments for those found guilty. And I wish hopefully we'll get some clergy who implement all systems possible to prevent this kind of thing from happening again.
Okay. And same to you, Godless Graham. Introduce yourself and then let everyone know your feelings briefly about the report that came out.
Okay. I'm Godless Cranium, or Mike, and I run my own YouTube channel called by the same name, as well as I'm a co-host or a host of the Heathen Hour podcast. It also has its own channel that we've just launched with my co-host Shannon Q. Yeah, so you can find me there. You can find me on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. There you go. What do I think about it? Obviously, I think it's disgusting. And although Preg is saying a whole bunch of stuff, it sounds like the same empty platitudes and canned responses that you get from the higher ups in the Catholic Church, who, whenever one of these scandals breaks, all you get is, you know, yeah, it's horrible, and we should do this. But they never actually do anything about it. I mean, the Pope recently just said in a tweet that he was going to ask for the Blessed Mother to intercede for the healing of victims, and he called for prayer and fasting. I mean, that's the extent of what they've done. So, yeah, you can say like it's horrible and say everything, but it's just an empty platitude, and you're still giving money to them. So you're still allowing it to happen, still not doing anything about it. That's what I think about it.
Okay. That's a good, I think that's a good starting point. So I guess we should go to how this happened then. And Pragmatic Culture, you can respond to what Godless Cranium just said, and then let us know in your own words how you think this got to this point and why. And just make sure, guys, this is going to be a conversation between the two of you. Steve and I aren't going to be involved as far as the dialogue. Just make sure you don't talk over each other so that everybody that's listening can follow along and hear. And whenever you're ready, Pragmatic Culture.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah. So in regards to the same canned responses, I'd like to think hanging them from the rooftops and flogging them in public is a little bit more than a canned response. But I understand, of course, why you would think that. It is, of course, disappointing that the church has become fairly infamous for sort of just letting this go unnoticed and just letting it wash over time and time again without any real change, even though there are several, not only within the church in terms of institutional positions like bishops and priests who want change, but a massive swath of the laity, of course, who also want massive change. And of course, we are definitely striving to take action against that. In regards to how it happened specifically, I think it's a combination of two things. And one is politics and one is institutional inertia. And I'll start with the institutional inertia first, because this isn't something necessarily unique to the church. You see it in a lot of different multinational organizations or corporations where you need to have a public face and you need to maintain contacts and things like that, to put it in very businessy type terms. And one of those things is that as you have sort of staff and priests and whoever else, clergymen, that get involved with the community in which they are preaching to, that community gets to know them very well. And there's a relationship built between a shepherd and his flock, so to speak. And so as time goes on and they get to better know each other and that relationship forms, it's easier for the church to have good relationships with the laity through that person. And as such, if that person is committing something unsavory act, per se, it becomes very difficult to remove them because the church is removing their liaison to the community through him. And then it takes time to bring in a new priest, reestablish the connection with the community. The community is obviously going to have a lot of lost trust because of what happens. And of course, this is, like I said, not unique to the church, because you see this in a lot of institutions, be the global corporations or even public schools, it happens as well. You build up faces that the investors or the parents at the PTA happen to know. And you just don't want to lose that because you're losing face that way. And it's a very hard thing to do. Now, the correct choice is there to just do it right away, which I wish the church did more often, because it's better to just take your medicine now and, you know, not have to worry about the consequences later on. But unfortunately, the church is very, very guilty of not doing that. But that's not something necessarily explicitly unique to the church. The second thing is that there's very much politics at play.
Let's give Charles Graham a chance to respond to that first part and then go to the number two so we don't get lost in the
Sure, no problem.
Okay. it sounds like a lot of whataboutery to me. It's bad. It's really bad, but it's not, you know, it happens all over the place. So, you know, let's just look the other way. It's, you know, just the way it is. Sometimes it happens, right? Garbage. I mean, the Catholic Church is way and above. Not only did it happen there, which is bad enough, but they've covered it up. They've continued to cover it up. They're covering it up now. They still have they keep records back. They've lost records. We don't even know how many victims there are. I pass on links to you in Twitter, Kyle, that mm-hmm. outline all of this stuff about you know, thousands of people. And not only have they done this to children, but they've done it to their own nuns. I mean, they've raped their own nuns and covered that up. I mean, this organization is. Yeah, child rape happens in schools, but schools aren't saying, they're not saying that they're the speakers for God or that God speaks through them and that they're a moral authority. They're not doing any of that. And they don't cover it up. They charge the teachers that get that. They lose their jobs. They lose their reputation. The Catholic Church has not done this. What they've done is covered it up. They moved them into different churches so that they could pray. They didn't tell the parents. They didn't tell the civil authorities. it's way worse than anything. And for Prague to sit there and say that, well, it happens in other things, to me is just, that's a load of nonsense, a bunch of garbage.
Okay, Prague?
Yeah. Okay, so first off, I'm not saying, it happens, look the other way. I'm openly condemning it. Just because I'm saying it's happening in other institutions doesn't mean I'm saying it doesn't matter in this case. What I'm explicitly saying is that there isn't a special condition on which the church is uniquely guilty of this thing. And I would like to point out that, no, allow me to just finish real quick. I'm sure you've heard of rubber rooms before. This isn't really a new concept. Teachers just get sent there to sit out certain parts of their tenure, and they continue to get paid for doing their job, but they're just sitting in that room doing nothing. And that is, in a large case, what happens when a teacher is tried with some sort of sexual abuse case. They are charged with some sort of sexual misconduct. They don't necessarily lose their job, and schools are just as guilty of as covering it up of the Catholic Church, especially when you consider the scale on which it's happening amongst in American public schools is much, much greater than it's happening on the church. For example, just to give a statistic here, there's a 2004 study done by, who is it, Shakestaff. And what it's found is that 9.6% of all students going through American high schools are have some sort of unwanted sexual misconduct with teachers as they go through high school. Now, that's 9.6% of all American high school students. That's in the millions, essentially. And it's not covered in the media at all. Or barely when it happens, when it's a particularly gruesome or in-depth incident, and it's happening on such a large scale. So clearly there has to be some covering up. Otherwise, you know, how is it going unnoticed that millions upon millions of kids are being sexually abused? And again, this isn't me saying that it isn't bad when the church does it. It's just that it's not unique to the church. I'm just saying there shouldn't be any a particularly special punishment for the church other than the norm, which I think should be as harsh as possible, as I've stated. And in terms of the whole, oh, well, the church is claiming to be some sort of moral authority, therefore special, you know, they deserve some sort of special eye or something like that. They are claiming to be a moral authority, but school is just as, if not more so, involved in many kids' lives than church. So even though church is claiming to be some sort of moral authority, school very much takes up the place of, it's the basis for all their social interaction. It's where they go to get essentially all of their education. It is their educational center. So, and I mean, you know, how many kids pay attention in church? School is far more implicated in the lives of these children than is the church. And so for you to say that just because the church is preaching something different, that therefore it is deserving of some sort of special punishment in the wake of this, seems very, very just disingenuous.
Actually, I never said that they deserve more at all. I said that the Catholic Church has done nothing, zero. They've done nothing but offer empty platitudes. You can go Pope's Twitter account while it's happening. And all he's saying is, oh, it happened. Oh, it's bad. The same things that you're saying, basically, besides the hang them from the rafters part. But I mean, basically, it's wrong. So therefore, here you go. Let's give them prayers and ask for the Blessed Mother to intercede. That's the amount of what they have put no policies in place. They have done nothing to prevent it from happening in the future. They're not doing anything that I know of for the victims of the people. They've blocked the authorities from changing the statute of limitations to raise it so that more people can come forward. They've done everything in their power. They've destroyed records. I mean, it's amazing what they have done, and particularly evil. I don't know anything about the rubber rooms, to be honest. I just looked it up on Wiki while you were talking. It doesn't say anything in here about, it says teachers accused of misconduct, which could be, you know, anything from swearing at a student to sexual assault. But we're talking explicitly about sexual assault here. And I don't think that most teachers, at least in developed countries, I know in Canada, they don't go, you know, they get accused of molesting thousands of children and they go to a rubber room. No, I don't think so. They go to jail and they lose their jobs and they lose their reputation. And that isn't the case. In fact, some of the priests, when they get reassigned, they got job things for to go to Disney World. So the Catholic Church knew that they were harming children and they said, hey, why don't you go work at Disney World, you know, with all the children? I mean, to say that the schools are the same is not at all true.
Well, okay. So to first just deal with the cover-ups, yes, it's happening. And obviously it's bad. But again, this isn't the whole church doing this. I don't know if, I know you haven't directly stated it, but by your tone, you seem to be implying it, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's the whole church doing it, when in reality, it's a select portion of the clergy getting involved in these cover-ups and reassignment. And of course, I absolutely agree with you that the Pope is doing absolute jack shit, because that's a big problem.
It isn't obviously the whole church. I mean, there's probably good. There's a lot of good priests, I'm sure, but it goes very high up, even up to the Pope Benedict, who also refused. He did not defrock a priest who molested as many as 200 deaf boys. So, I mean, it's not like it's a select few. This is like the church hierarchy. Like a large portion of the church hierarchy is involved in this.
Well, hold on. Obviously, it goes all the way up, but that does not mean a large portion of the church hierarchy, because obviously the church is a global organization. But of course, I don't disagree with you that the church hierarchy, it does go to the top. And of course, this punishment should go just as harsh for all of them who are involved in covering it up. And there should be institutional changes that need to be made. And that kind of gets into what I meant to bring up as my second point, which is sort of politics in the church, because like every institution, there is also politics. And again, I'm not saying this excuses it. I'm just saying the church isn't unique in this way. I'm not saying there should be any different of a treatment for the church. But just to clarify on the point of politics, within the church, there are, of course, different factions that are vying for certain messages to be pushed from the church. And obviously what you got with Francis is a far more liberal message in which he was trying to open up passages to deal with, or not deal with, but to open up to the LGBTQ plus community and such. He was trying to get involved in the policy of immigration and climate change and all this. So he's a very liberal, progressive pope. And part of what happens is that the people who are guilty of these crimes, both covering it up and actually committing it itself, are in line with his agenda. And that can be the case no matter who the Pope is and no matter who the faction is. If they happen to agree with your politics, then they get to stay a little longer, which is, of course, also a problem. And this does need to be rectified. I don't disagree with you that the Pope has done very little. Previous popes have done very little. So I agree with you 100% that there does need to be structural change and more done. But
you think these priests were protected because they agreed with the Pope's politics? Is that what you're saying?
In part, certainly. Both, you know, the one when it happened back in say 2010, they were there was a bent towards Benedict, and when it's happening now, obviously there's a bit of a bent towards Francis. One of the things I know from looking up sources on Catholic websites specifically is that when you had progressive popes doing this sort of thing, they were usually the ones who got the reassignment elsewhere to, as you say, kind of go to Disneyland. But other conservative popes who did this thing got the treatment that all of them should have gotten, quite frankly, which was they were, sent off. They were, unfortunately, they weren't turned over to the civil authorities, which is a failing on all parts, but they were sent away to some, like, not remote island, but they were sent away to somewhere where they weren't in contact with the public. So, but of course, they should have been turned over to the authorities as well. So I agree with you, there does need to be some level of structural reform in the church that actually gets into turning these criminals over to the civil authorities as soon as they find out it's happening.
And would you say that the statute of limitations needs to be increased so that would you agree to that change so that more of these priests could be criminally held responsible?
I don't know about statutes of limitations. That's a bit beyond my scope, just because I don't know the legal precedent and the the proceedings that will go into it normally. I'm sorry.
If I can, let me break in to just clarify something. In Pennsylvania, if a victim turned 18 after August the 22nd of 2002, they have until the age of 50 to file charges. Those who turned 18 before that August the 27th no longer can pursue charges. And for civil charges in regards to child sex abuse, they have until their 30th birthday to claim that. So now you can answer this question, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know. if that's the case for all of them, then not just, you know, specific instances within the church, but specific instances elsewhere, then if that's how the state of Pennsylvania does it, or if that's how U.S. federal law code does it, then maybe they have it that way for a reason. I don't know. But if it's being expanded all around to prosecute all types of people like this, not just specifically within the church, then I'd see no reason why that shouldn't be expanded and such.
All right, fair enough, I guess. you seemed kind of reticent to give into that point, considering that the church covered it up, and that's why they weren't able to come forward. They had no evidence to convict any of these people. So, I mean,
I'm just reticent to change anything illegal in general, just because I don't have the know-how to know why things are the way they are. And, you know, if it's being done, I don't want a law to specifically single out any specific group. Like, unless the crimes are valid, I want the law to apply equally to all the criminals. So I don't want this law to be just sort of a tool to, like, you know, put the Catholic Church under a magnifying glass in specific. If we're going to expand it to all ranges of sexual misconduct for all institutions, then yeah, that's fine. But I don't want this to be some sort of tool used to specifically hound Catholics. That seems unnecessary, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you would. So you seemed to have a strong feeling about what should happen to these Catholic priests, right? But you don't seem to be. You seem to worry about what kind of magnifying glass is used in order to find these priests and do something about them. To me, doesn't sound very good. Go ahead.
No, it's not that I don't want them to be found. Obviously, I do. The history of Catholicism in the United States is a long and turbulent one. And quite frankly, it doesn't simply have to do with the more secular crowd coming down on Catholics in particular. It's also, Protestants who have hated Catholics in the United States for quite a long time. So anti-Catholic bias extends well beyond sort of like secular leftist factions. It extends into the mainstream of even the political right in America. So I'm not just thinking about, oh, well, what if, you know, the mean progressives do something with this? I'm trying to think about, well, is this going to be used to sort of like try to nuzzle out Catholicism in the United States in general? But of course I want them found through whatever measures possible. So long as, you know, again, so long as it's just not specifically being used as a tool against Catholics.
I don't see it as much of a political issue. I mean, I would think that right wingers or conservatives and liberals could agree that child rape is bad and they need to be found. I mean,
well, yeah,
and to put whatever measures are necessary to make sure that as many of them get found as possible so that they're not doing it again. I don't know.
No,
call me
crazy.
Again,
this isn't the problem that they should be found. The issue is it only going to be, you know, after this law is passed, is it only going to be enforced on the Catholic Church? Is it also going to be enforced on the schools, on the businesses, on Protestant churches, on synagogues, wherever else? All I'm concerned about is impartial treatments once a law like this is passed. Because again, other institutions, and I'm not saying this makes it any less bad on the Catholic part, are any less guilty of this. I'm just saying that it shouldn't be used as a tool to impartially root out one religious faction.
Right. From what I've read, it would be adopted by the public, by civil law. It wouldn't just be used against the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is trying to block it, but it wouldn't be specific to them.
Well, there's multiple stages to policy.
Yeah, we're going to go to the second question. Okay.
All right. Sure.
go ahead. I'm gonna let you get the response into that real quick, and then we're going to move on to the second point.
Oh, okay, so just quickly, obviously I'm not opposed to the law being passed, but of course the law is being passed doesn't mean it's going to be executed impartially. It's not the law being passed I'm worried about. It's the agencies that use it and who's in charge of them and their biases that I'm worried about. So again, the law, completely understandably, want it passed. The people who use it are the ones I'm suspicious of.
Okay, so the second question that I had up there was, if knowing with that grand jury report and kind of what I was reading going into this discussion, those 7 points, knowing that these priests were continuously being paid and housed and shuffled around, does this now make Catholics complicit if they continue to donate to an organization that is refusing any type of sweeping reform, knowing where that money could be possibly going? And we'll start with Godless Cranium on this one.
I would think that they are, if they know about it. I'm not saying every Catholic, but I don't know how, unless you're living under a rock, I don't know how you wouldn't know about it. But if there are some that don't know about it, then I would say that they're not complicit. But anybody that is still giving, donating to the church, knowing what's happened and what's currently happening and still happening. Like I said in my tweet, I'll just read the tweet really quick. It just says, if I found out Walmart management was involved in a pedophile ring, but not all of the employees were aware of it, I would still stop shopping at Walmart. I would no longer promote Walmart to others. I would avoid Walmart, yet Catholics continue to slap money in the collection plate.
Okay, pragmatic culture.
Okay, sure. So in my mind, it's kind of, I thought of an analogous situation sort of to this, not explicitly similar, but sort of, you'll see as I go on. It's like when they discovered the systematic abuse and torture of Muslim inmates in Abu Ghraib prison by U.S. military personnel, you know, Americans stopped paying taxes, right? Because, you know, paying taxes to a federal government which employed people who in turn tortured other people would make them complicit in torture. Or maybe it wasn't that they stopped paying their tax.
Can I stop you right there? Because that's not a good analogy. I mean, you're basically saying that because you're, when I pay my taxes, I'm not like voluntarily doing it. It's part of the law. The government will force me to pay taxes. You're not being forced to put money in a collection plate.
Well, the point is that just because you're putting money in anyway, well, you can it might be part of the law, but you can always not pay taxes. Like, just because the idea that you were complicit in something.
Yeah, that worked out great for Ken Hovind, didn't it?
Yeah, are you going to go to jail if you don't put money in the collection plate?
No, but the thought is the same. It's not about the money. No, it's not about if just because you pay a service doesn't mean you're guilty for what the people.
It's not even close to the same. Like, if you wanted to make a fair analogy, you could use like something like charity, right? Like if I found out, Snap was harming children, would I donate to that charity? And if I did, would I be complicit? Yeah, I think I would be.
No, because you're not responsible for the actions of the people in that charity. As you get the bad people in that organization, just because you continue to give them money, you're not responsible for the actions individuals in that group take who you may or may not have funded through your donation. Like, you're continuing to fund an organization that does other things and has and employs other people. And those other people aren't doing anything wrong. So why are you punishing them for things that only a select few did? It's not like it's not guilt by association where a whole organization and all those who support it suddenly become complicit in something because a few of their members did something wrong.
So say I was donating to the United Way and I found out the United Way hierarchy was covering up and raping small children and they've been doing it for 30 years and they're still continuing to cover it up. And I'd be like, so I should just keep giving to the United Way. That's what you're saying. That's absolutely ridiculous. Okay, go ahead. I'll ask that question. Would you hold that? Would you think that that's a good thing to do?
I would say I'd say that the people who are committing those crimes in the United Way, if you don't think that they are, excuse me, if not everybody in the United Way is guilty of this crime and you wanted to continue donating to them, knowing that there is other good being done, then yes, I wouldn't say there's a problem with that because there are other good people in that institution who you are supporting, who are doing good, who have done no wrong. And that money is going to them too. So it's not a problem if not everybody is doing it.
I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, that's ridiculous. I could just give my money to another charity or something. That's still doing good. The good people in that organization, having found out that, like, if I worked at the United Way, and I do work in charities, and I found out that my organization was covering up for child rape, I'd be out of there. I wouldn't even be working there. I would move and go to a different charity or start my own charity.
Well, it's worth pointing out that the Catholic Church isn't, well, they are one overarching organization. There are again, multiple factions within the church. You can change where you put your collections. For example, you don't have to give to parishes who are explicitly involved in the conduct, and you also don't have to give to dioceses that might have been involved in it too, which is a much larger area. But you can. But again,
as far as I know, though, a portion of that money still goes to the hierarchy, and does it not? Does it not get sent to the Holy See?
No, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then you're still giving, even if you gave it to a parish that isn't implicated in this. And again, who knows? Even if a place hasn't been implicated, doesn't mean that they're not guilty of it, because we don't even know.
I think how
many people are doing it. But that money would still, but just say that the parish is absolutely innocent, and you're giving money to it. Part of that money, I think it's 10%. I might be wrong because I'm not Catholic, but I remember reading that somewhere. I think it's 10% still goes to the Holy See. So you're still funding the activity.
Well, yeah, just because it's, again, not everybody in the Holy See is guilty of this. Obviously, it does stretch a long ways up, but there is a greater good being done there. It's not a matter of like, oh, this isn't, it's more analogous to what you're proposing is sort of like,
several cardinals and a pope have been implicated. I mean, I don't know how much more you could get. Yeah. I mean, unless,
well, again,
unless
so you're saying that
unless 100% of the people,
members.
One at a time, guys.
No.
Sorry.
It's a large amount of people. Not just a small. You make it sound like it's like one person. It's like a pope has been implicated. Several of the princes of the church, which are called cardinals, have been implicated, and then on from there, bishops, priests for decades. I mean, this isn't like it's just a couple people.
Well, I'm not saying it's just a couple people, but I'm trying to put into frame here that the church isn't simply an organization based out of the United States and Canada and Europe. The church is a global organization that has multiple branches doing multiple things.
And they're doing it everywhere.
It's... No, they're
yeah,
not.
Yeah, they're
there's
doing
no
it everywhere, including...
But...
Yeah, there is.
No.
I sent it to Kyle. There's
proof of it happening in other... There's...
Let me
sorry, go ahead.
In Africa.
Let me put this into a...
Just FYI, right now there is an investigation from the Attorney General to go there. They're looking at New York, New Mexico, Florida, Missouri, Illinois, Nebraska, and New Jersey.
And let me put this into a different perspective to kind of steer, hold on one second to kind of steer this aspect of the conversation in a way. That report was only in one state. Just like Steve said, they're getting ready to go into other states. We know that this is, I mean, if we're to look at trends, I guess, this is probably going to be a recurring theme that happens throughout these different churches, meaning that whether or not you intend that your money goes to the church that you attend, they may not be doing anything wrong. However, the part of that money that is taken from that local church and sent to the church as a whole, of the bigger church, we know now that a portion of that money has gone to continuing to pay for these priests, continuing to pay for moving them around, continuing to pay their expenses, and knowing that still that's probably going on as we speak, how does that not make them complicit?
Well, are you complicit when you buy, say, an article of clothing from H&M or an iPod from, or something, an iPhone from Apple? Are you complicit in the child labor and the sweatshops that those countries employ in order to make those things? Are you supporting the horrible conditions in third world countries by supporting them?
That was Granny.
Oh, that's... yeah, I would think so. If you're buying stuff that you know is being manufactured by child labor, then yeah, you're complicit. You're feeding the company money.
All right, but people do it anyway, right? Because there's a lot more going on than just the sweatshops, right?
Who cares if they do it? I'm not saying that they should be doing it. I'm just saying you asked me a question, I answered it. That yeah, they're complicit. Just like you're complicit when you go and put money in a donation jar and send it to pedophile priests and people that cover up for them.
Well, no, it's not complicitly. When you're buying an iPhone, you're not saying, "Oh yeah, I consent to these child sweatshops and stuff." I'm consenting to the work conditions here. There's no contract that states that.
Let's clarify something real quick. The iPhone thing, these were students that were between the ages of 17 and 19, and they were just the scandal was that it was for work experience, but the iPhone wasn't going out and having 8-year-olds make iPhones. So there's a huge disproportionate amount of analogy here. Okay. So if you want to buy an iPhone, that's fine. Again, it was 17 to 19-year-olds.
All right. We can drop the Apple analogy. Let's go back to then just say sweatshops in like Thailand where they make the sneakers or whatever, and or somewhere in India where they're picking up metal off the streets and bringing it to factories. That's, we know it's child labor there. By you buying the products of these companies, you are not complicit in the horrible conditions in which those children have to do their work. You're not saying, yeah, I buy this product. That means I am absolutely supporting what's going on over there. There's a disconnect there between the action you're taking and what's happening and the consent you're giving. There's nothing there to indicate that you're agreeing to this or you're saying that this is good because other things are happening than just that sweatshop, A. And B, it's the act of buying something or the act of giving to something does not mean you're, again, it's just the disconnect of actions between me giving money to my church, my priest, whoever, and then those bad things happening because a portion of my money just happens to go to it.
Well, I don't think we're going to agree on that. I mean, if I just see it the opposite way. If I know that, I don't know, my local convenience store down the street is, you know, raping and beating children in the back, then I'm not going to be giving them my business. If I knew that and I was still kept giving them my money, then I'd be complicit and I would hold myself to a better standard than that, I would hope.
Why would you?
Because I know what's happening and I'm still giving them the means to continue the abuse.
But how you're not giving them specifically the means to continue their abuse. You're giving them, you're exchanging a product for a service. You're not saying, yeah, go on and continue abusing kids just by buying something from there.
Oh, if boy. I know that money is being used to do it, then yeah, I am.
How? You're just saying you are, but how?
I don't think you're going to agree on this either. But just to let you know, when companies like Gap and I believe it was Sears was the other one, when it broke about the clothing and how it was getting made, the American and other world markets had a conniption and refused. There were protests, there were bans, and they changed the conditions because the people responded by boycotting those products. You know why? Because they felt complicit and they weren't going to donate their money knowing where it was going. And that's how they enacted change.
Yes, exactly.
We can talk about individual institutions and how much they actually changed, because it's still a pretty big question about, I know a couple of people on left Twitter who would argue about how much things have really changed due to the protest of liberals in the first world. But that, again, another topic. But my main point is, you simply giving the act of exchanging one item for a service or exchanging money for a service, even if you know what's going on behind the scenes, isn't consent or isn't agreement to allow them to continue to do those things. Even if by, say, indirectly, even if it is giving them the funds to, you know, the funds to, and they happen to use those funds to do explicit things, you're not responsible for what they do with those funds.
Yeah, if I know what they're doing with those funds, then absolutely I am. It's my money and I'm giving it to them and allowing them to continue to abuse children. If the convenience store in my last example were to fire the management and create zero tolerance policies, and they were to be open-ended and show all their files and try their best to get rid of every bad apple in that convenience store, and I was satisfied that they were, then I might go back to that convenience store. Probably not, but then if somebody was to make the case, they did everything they could, but the Catholic Church is not doing that. They're not anywhere close to doing that. They are way off of that. They're still protecting priests that abuse children, and your money is helping them do that.
Well, again, we agree on the structural change that's necessary within the church because there needs to be a better system. I'm just saying the disagreement isn't that there needs to be something done or that the church needs to change when it comes to this issue. The disagreement is that I don't believe that you can say reasonably that just because you give funds to an institution and that institution does happen to be doing bad things and you're aware of it, it does not mean you're consenting to that bad thing happening. There's a disconnect between the action and the motivation, and to accuse, you know, Catholics who continue to give to the PAN who want to see that change of then being complicit in that, even as they advocate in other, through other means for that change, is just, it doesn't, it seems disingenuous and it doesn't seem to logically follow.
I'm not sure how it would be disingenuous, because that would mean that I'm being dishonest. Or maybe not disingenuous, and I'm being...
I think I misspoke there. Wrong word. But yeah, I just don't see how it logically follows, is what I should have just said.
So right. I don't think.
Well, again, I don't think we're going to agree.
Let's go on to the third point, which was, should the U.S. government step in and maybe create some kind of oversight, regulate the church, maybe remove their tax exemption status? What do you think about having an outside entity be involved, Pragmatic Culture?
I'm somewhat wary to have an outside institution looking on the Catholic Church, just because I'm wary of anti-Catholic bias from all wings of United States governance and other institutions. But if it were strictly set to be, say, you know, some period of time, and it's an institution that's willing to, you know, not just sort of like beat down on the church, but simultaneously work with the church for greater transparency, I wouldn't necessarily disregard it. Again, I just have to see some sort of promise or some sort of something that's very, I'd like to see something that guarantees that there isn't going to be bias against the church in this process, but I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to it. I just need to see some more specifics.
And what about taxes?
The church continues to be a nonprofit organization that is not doing, again, that's doing more than just abusing children, as unfortunate as that is. And I'd like to think that if there were any other nonprofit in the United States that was caught doing such a thing, that the United States wouldn't immediately revoke their nonprofit status just because some of their staff, even if it is some of the higher-ups, were acting extremely poorly. Like, I don't think it's the purview of the United States to use specific regulatory policies to go after specific institutions for crimes that, you know, will be just tried on the individual level in civil court. I don't think you need institutional punishment when you can get all these other individuals who are actually guilty of the crimes themselves.
Okay, Douglas?
Well, if it's a charity, then it should be treated like every other charity, and charities that get caught doing criminal activities lose their charitable status. So I guess that's where I would go with that. And they would have to regain it back just like every other charity. Of course, I think that probably religious people, Catholics, maybe even Prague Culture, although I'll let him answer that for himself, will argue for a special treatment for the Catholic Church because they're a religion, but that's how I see it anyway.
And what about like an oversight group?
I'm in favor of that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely in favor of finding everybody that has abused children. And I think that the Catholic Church should be made to pay damages to all of the victims, and that they need to put in policies and whatever, you know, strict policies against, that would prevent this from happening again in the future. I guess, does that answer the question?
Yeah, yeah. And he asked a good question, Pragmatic Culture. Why shouldn't the Catholic Church be treated like every other charity and lose their status and be forced to either gain it back or not at all?
Well, I actually haven't heard of other charities losing their status. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but if that's the case, then again, I think you can reduce it down to the localized level where these institutions were occurring. I think you could just say, well, all right, churches in X area where the crime was occurring will lose their non-tax status, and areas over X, Y, and Z. I think it'd be fine if they were to do it by that. But again, you know, if there are institutions like St. Jude who do all that cancer research, I'm sure you've heard commercials for them. And there are all things like that, that of course are in no way guilty of these crimes. And so I think to slap a broad revoke of the tax exempt status would be too harsh. But I think if you wanted to do it on a local level, like say churches in Pennsylvania and that, like that, I could understand something like that.
Godscreen, do you want to speak to maybe how he says local, but it goes all the way up to the chain to the top? So,
yeah, exactly. So it doesn't make sense. It would be all of them. I mean, in Australia alone, well, and I think I gave this to Preg Culture on Twitter earlier in the year, a commission found that 7% of Australian priests were accused of abusing children between 1950 and 2015. Those are just the ones we know of. 7% of all. I mean, is a huge number. This goes. It's in Africa. It's in Ireland. It's in the Netherlands. It's in Canada. It's in the States. It's all over the world. This has been happening. It's not just a few bad churches. Yeah, they definitely need. It would be the same as like again. If they were the United Way, you wouldn't say, well, the United Way office in Pennsylvania could lose their charitable status. No, the United Way would lose their status.
Well, the important thing, I brought this up when you tweeted at me, is 7% are accused. That doesn't mean 7% were found guilty. And obviously the accusations in themselves indicate that something was going on, but it is still left to see who is actually found guilty. And I believe that's an important part that can't be overlooked, because we do presume some level of innocence. Well, we just presume outright innocence until proven guilty. And I think that's very important to remember in this conversation. But also, on top of that, there's, again, the being that the church is a global organization. When I say it goes up to the top, when you say it goes up to the top, I should say, I'm not saying it's a small in terms of like a few handful of people. I'm saying it's small in terms of percentage of the total church. Like, even though it goes up to the top only makes up a small number of the entire clergy, as do the bishops that happen to be going on, including the bishops that happen to make up the certain dioceses and such where these crimes were taking place. But other than that, you know,
we'll have to stop right there because your example was that, hold on, your example was that example of the tax exemption, that it should be done on the local level, those who are guilty. I consider the higher ups and the hierarchy that cover it up knowingly just as guilty as the one who is raping the child. So how would you just put it into one local place when it's going all the way up to the top?
Because the top doesn't cover, you know, like anything, the church is an organization with multiple branches. And so like the branches in, say, what's one state, Washington or Colorado or something like that, aren't guilty of the sins of, you know, the higher ups or the sins of their other branches on that level. Like they aren't, like the other branches aren't responsible for what the headquarters do, right? They have
If in retail you have upper management that is responsible for all the local branches, every one of them. So if something goes wrong on the local level, it is still upper management's responsibility to take care of. In this particular case, upper management not only didn't take care of it, but was aware of it, but covered it up. So how is it that you're saying that you can somehow, and I don't even think it's even legal, to tax the or remove the tax exempt status from a local level, but it doesn't affect the higher ups when clearly the upper management is the problem here because they didn't take enough action.
Okay, yeah, but what I actually had something I tweeted in response to Godless Cranium's original sort of Walmart tweet because, you know, the church is the removing the tax exempt status is not necessarily a death knell for the church. Obviously, it will recover, but it goes along the line of it would still be a massive shock, and the church would essentially be what you're talking about, equivalent of closing down several Walmarts that had nothing to do with the incident whatsoever. So now hundreds of people are now losing their jobs.
Why is that a problem? They didn't commit.
Well, because why are they guilty of the sins of upper men?
That's what happens.
You seem to think that, like,
because they continue to pay.
Every other business. That is how it works in every business on the planet, I assure you.
Well, oh, and by the way, I just wanted to add that the 7% figure for Australia in Prague's counterpoint there, I'm pretty sure that the 7%, I haven't looked it up again. Again, I gave you the links, but I'm pretty sure that's a legal finding. It's not like, it was the Australian government, the highest kind of form of inquiry that they can make legally. So it's not like, well, it might be true, it might not. It's, they have lots of evidence.
I choose to wait on conviction.
And we've got 15, we've got about 15 minutes left. Well, we got about 15 minutes left, guys. And I want to read you off now. That's okay. A couple years ago, the USCCB and John Jay College released a report, and they selected there was a certain selection across the United States that they investigated, and this was a part of the it came after the Boston Globe article, but this is they found from 1950 until 2002, 4,392 priests were accused of child sex abuse. 10,667 individuals were abused. That's 4.3% of the clergy, just that they sampled. 252 of those priests were convicted. 100 served jail time. Less than half of them served jail time. Interestingly enough, there was a $500 million that was used from the Vatican in these settlements. Okay, that's what they claimed in 2002, that the church used $500 million to settle claims across the nation. In 2006, documents surfaced that revealed that the Vatican had lied, and it was actually $2.6 billion that was used in hush money. So tell me how an infallible church, the God's representative on earth, allows this to happen, and not only allows it, lies about the settlement money.
Okay. Well,
I just wanted to add to your question, that $500 billion or whatever that number was there came from you. Came from you and everybody else that knew about it, giving that money to the Catholic Church in order to use for hush money.
Yeah, tithing and the donations.
Okay. That's great. I gave that money with neither the knowledge nor the consent that it would be used for such things. So I feel completely fine washing my hands of that. But I will also say that the church and its infallibility in terms of its moral doctrine does not extend to the members and the parts who make her up. The church in its doctrine and its teaching is infallible. Its members are not. And I agree with you. Their fallibility has become very, very visible. And it's very, very disturbing that such a thing happens. And I agree with you guys pretty much on all the changes you want to make, with the exception of things like, tax exempt status and maybe actually, I think it was just tax exempt status kind of that I disagreed with you on. Other than that, special agencies, maybe extending the limits of what do you call it?
Statute of limitations?
Statute of limitations. That's what I meant. And all that other stuff. It's like pretty the tax exempt thing was the only point of contention here. I agree that there needs to be more openness from the church. And what I am essentially arguing is that, one, not every Catholic who gives to the church, even in knowledge of this, is guilty because they don't consent to this being done, and they're trying to change it in other ways. And two, to respond briefly to the business thing about, branches go out of business when HR screws up. And like, yeah, that sucks. And I think that when something like that happens, like when, the big wigs at, say, Enron were falsely trading and stuff, and then millions of people lost their jobs because of what Enron higher-ups had done, I don't think anybody thought it was fair that the lower downs, like just the engineers or whoever at Enron, had lost their job because they had no clue what was going on. So I know it stuff happens like this, but it doesn't mean it ought to happen like that. And so I'll just leave
it there. But you agree, though, now you know that these funds do go to these things. So are you still going to be contributing to the church? Because you can't use that same excuse now that you do know that things are going on, because you just said that you washed your hands of it because you didn't know back then. Fair enough, right? I agree with you. But now you do know.
Okay, well, again, is the Enron employee guilty of, or just even the person who buys it?
I'm not asking about Enron. I'm asking about you. Will you still be given to the church, and what excuse would you use for giving money to the church, knowing full well this still goes on? Matter of fact, let me quote on this real quick. The guy that actually investigated this, the St. Louis Archbishop, was embroiled in the sexual scandals from 1980s. He was investigating this. He actually said during those at the time when he was doing these investigations, he did not know if child rape was illegal. Okay. He knows now. I don't know how he didn't know then. Right. But that's the,
yeah. And asking a different way to ask the
church.
Yeah, and here's a different way to go about asking that that question. That money that you're giving the Catholic Church to be used for what you claim is good, now that you know that in certain cases it's not being used for the greater good, that money can still be used by other charities that don't have that black cloud hanging over their head, and make sure that every dime of that money goes to the good work and not for paying some priest in some other country after he's been moved around for abusing a child. What is wrong with that? And why don't you do that? Do you need the Catholic Church to be one with the God that you believe in?
Well, part of it, yes, is the spiritual belief that the church isn't simply the people who comprise her. It's also a greater entity. It is the church. It is Christ's bride. It is something greater than the people who make it up, even in its earliest conception.
God should ask for a divorce, to be honest with you.
Look, no, I really, really don't disagree with you on any of the things you're saying about any of the changes that should be made. I don't think it's right to say that it's complicit, that the whole of the people who give to this institution and because of the fallible men who make it up are now guilty of or complicit in some crime. That's the only contention I really disagree with, because I think you're casting, you know, even if it's unintentional, you're casting guilt on a lot of people who absolutely have no part in it.
I think they are. Do you think they're
going to? It's intentional. Godless Cranium, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. Yes. what he said. So it seems convenient to me that you simultaneously want the church to be one thing. So you said it, you know, it's a representative of God or whatever, and it's greater than. But then on the flip side, you're saying, well, it's only, you know, a bunch of small, you know, small parts of it that are rotten, that are the problem. Well, it's either one or the other. Is it the entire thing? I mean, I can give you, here's just one example. So this is going back to 1984. I'll just read this quickly to you. It says, shortly after admitting this person admitted to sexually molesting a 14-year-old child. John Connor of Pennsylvania was sent to a Toronto area facility that helps clergy deal with addictions, mental health issues, and sexual disorders. After 8 months of treatment at the Southdale Institute, officials there warned the church that Connor should not be put in a position where he would have to be responsible for adolescents. Yet the church seemed to ignore the institute's advice and would later assign Connor to a parish in Conshohocken, Pennsylvania, with a grade school and encourage him to educate youth. I mean, that's just one example of the negligence that this organization has been embroiled in for decades upon decades. And like I said at the very beginning, it doesn't just go to children. It goes to the nuns that serve in that church. This idea that the money can't be given to some other charity that would do the same work without having to fund child abusers is ridiculous to me.
Yeah, and the church is worth $30 billion.
It's just like a mafia. It boils down to the Catholic Church is just like a mafia.
$30 billion they're worth. If they're so concerned about charity, Why is that money not going to charity? $30 billion that they have reserved just sitting around.
Well, if actually more than that,
I'm being very conservative here. Trust me. I know. It could be upwards of up to 200 million or 200 billion.
But I mean, why aren't they giving some of that money to the victims? Right. Like, they haven't done anything.
Okay. So first and foremost, yeah, they should be giving money to the victims, obviously. Again, I'm not disagreeing on things that should be done. I do hear someone saying, I saw a comment. Yeah. Yeah. He agrees on all the changes. He just doesn't agree anything substantive should be done about it. No, I want things to be done about it. And there are other options besides not giving to the church. And to answer the original question that was posed to me, yes, I still do plan on giving to the church. But there's more ways to change the church than simply to stop donating. And I don't think trying to guilt those who do give to the church with the intention of changing it through other manners by saying they're still complicit in it just by supporting in it is going to actually help affect change. I think by trying to guilt people, you're only going to make them dig into their initial positions or a retreat to a position of, well, these people are attacking me, I don't like it, and I'm just going to have nothing change at all. Not saying that's right, not making excuses for it, but I think there's better ways to change the church than the strategy you guys are talking about, and I don't think not giving is a necessary strategy even.
So they've known since the 1980s, and they've still not done anything about it whatsoever. So
the guy that investigated it didn't know that it was illegal. Let's wrap your head around this. The guy that was investigating it by the church didn't know child rape was against the law. That's how much they concerned themselves in this investigation.
And that,
yeah. So
that goes into the last question too that we'll discuss real quick. Go ahead, Godless.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going.
Oh, I was just going to, if you have another point that you wanted to tack on, we'll do that. Okay, if you wanted to touch on that briefly, Godless Cranium, I was even going to go into the kind of the last question to see what you guys thought, but you can go ahead and make the point that you were getting ready to.
Oh, I was just making the point that they've already known for several decades that this has been going on. They've done nothing. So obviously the just be quiet and not guilt them into actually taking action isn't working. So maybe, you know, more attention and more focus being paid to this child raping organization will help. And I think it will. So.
That goes right into the last question. I want to ask you this to kind of combine them together. But what can be done now? What should be done now? What is the best way forward from this situation to ensure that nothing like this ever happens again? Although I don't think that's going to be the case.
I think there is an option.
Whichever one wants to pick that up first.
Sorry, I think I'm operating on some kind of delay, which is why I'm kind of interrupting you guys. I apologize for that. But no, I think there are valid options.
There is a little bit of a lag with the software.
Okay. Then, yeah, I do think that there are options for not only the laity, but other clergy to get involved. And I think one of the best options is to encourage young men who were otherwise not considering the priesthood because of incidents like this. I would like to encourage them to be a more traditional sort of new priestly order that's coming into the church in order to really implement forms, because really it's sort of this politics of like trying to adapt to the modern world and be it conservative versus liberal kind of thing that's stifling sort of progress being made in incidences like these, where if we just have sort of a classical Catholic tradition return through a new priesthood that we can fix some of these issues. And I do think the option of, you know, if you donate somewhere else to another parish, yes, some of it is still going to the higher ups who screwed up, but you're also shorting the coffers of bishops in dioceses who were guilty of the crime. So you're making your wallets being felt, you're making the wallets of certain bishops still hurt, even if it's not making all those guilty hurt. And that is an effect that can still be felt, even if it's not necessarily felt by those who are the most high up. And so I think those are still some reasonable options.
We do have one Cranium question from the live chat, because we're do you want to finish that, Cranium?
Well, hold on. Let Cranium respond to that.
Well, I've already responded to it. I think they should lose their charity status. I think that they should be completely transparent. I think that would be a good first step, would be to be completely transparent. Obviously, I think that in a perfect world, I think Catholics would stop putting their money in the collection plate, and until such time that the church cleans itself up. I think those are good first steps. I'd like to see the Pope take a lead and actually do something besides ask for more prayer and fasting, because prayer and fasting isn't working, and it hasn't worked for decades, probably hundreds of years, for however long the Catholic Church has been around. I don't think these problems started in the 80s and just happened now. I mean, I think this has been going on for a very, very, very long time, and right, the Catholic Church has ruined countless lives. They should also be giving money to the victims, paying them something, because they've ruined their lives. I mean, they've mentally and physically abused them, and they should be held accountable for that. And of course, all the priests that have been,
do you think the priests
implicated should be put on trial and go to prison just like everybody else?
Do you think priests should be maybe change their celibacy rules? Do you think that would
Yeah, I think that would help. Yeah, I think it would help. And it would also the thing of the culture of secrecy that the church has is also, I think, part of a big part of the problem. Also just Christian teaching in general, that there's some kind of worldly taught that they're the voice of God or whatever, definitely is part of the problem. They've created this monster that billions of people have believe in and buy into, and that gives them ultimate power, and that's part of the problem. When you have ultimate power, this is the kind of thing that happens.
Okay, Steve, we'll now go into the Super Chats, and just to let you guys know, we will be holding a little bit of an after show on here following probably like 15 minutes after we close this show, and we'll kind of open it up to see how everybody's feeling, and let everybody kind of jump in and get a talk going. So join us for that about 15 minutes after we close.
I'm not going to read these in order. I do have all of them, but I want to read them. I'm not muted. You can hear me? Am I muted?
You were.
Can you hear me? Oh, no, I shouldn't be muted.
I can't now.
Okay, so mm-hmm. I'm going to start with the questions first for the Super Chats, because this one's from Holy Kool-Aid. He asked, the Pope has ultimate power to change things, knows about it, but does nothing. How can you excuse this?
I'm assuming this is directed at me, right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Godless Cranium.
No, he does have ultimate power to change things, and it's, of course, a crime that he hasn't. I think, honestly, if there's an international body, that the church higher-ups should be brought to justice through some way, shape, or form, too. I don't know how the international court system works in particular, but I don't know, maybe it would be an interesting situation to extradite the Pope. I don't think it would happen, but I wouldn't mind it happening. And, of course, I don't condone it. I think it's a crime, and I think it should be punished, just like the bishops in the state who were covering it up.
You know, there have been calls for his resignation, right?
Oh yeah, I've been on that train for quite some time. It didn't take that this incident in particular for me to dislike this Pope.
But he was there from God. I mean, he's God's vicar, right? So how does that work? How does man take down the vicar of Christ? How do they ask?
It's not a matter of
God and put him there.
Well, no, there's the authority of the church is granted through not just the vicar himself, but the church is in communion with the Holy Spirit, and that the Holy Spirit is supposed to try and guide the church through some of her trying times. And obviously,
he didn't guide any of the priests molesting the children, so I don't think that's a really great excuse, honestly. So I think the ghost was working anywhere in that particular case. Would you agree that if you're going to have this special pleading that the Holy Ghost is going to lead the church and call for the resignation or the recall of the vicar of Christ, which is the head of the church, but for some reason he doesn't want to like give guidance to the actual priest committing these sexual assault, molestations, and rapes? Why is the Holy Ghost
so drunk?
Well, no, this is a matter of
drunk.
There are people who choose to ignore the messages of God, and there are people who choose to ignore their duties and things like that. Again, it comes back to men being fallible. So the Holy Spirit could very well have been telling these people, hey, what you're doing is real messed up, and they could have just sat there and ignored it. God doesn't deny us our free will, although this is getting into a little bit more philosophical territory.
I'm kind of curious. Then why does God pick the Catholic Church? If so many people are not listening to them, why doesn't he find another church to be their spokesperson?
Because it's not a matter of simply, oh, the members of the church are corrupt, therefore the Holy Spirit isn't working, therefore God needs to abandon ship. The Holy Spirit was promised, to the apostles that it would see us through all trying times, no matter what. And of course, this is one of those very trying times. And so there is a certain amount of faith necessary that the church will be seen through this incident, certainly not unscathed, hopefully not unscathed. Hopefully the Holy Spirit works for greater change in the church through whatever means possible. And I hope that's what ends up coming about through this.
So what about the God's wrath and plague?
Before Steve reads another super chat.
Well, quick, I'm just kind of curious because, you know, you got people saying that hurricanes are because of gay people, but here you have, this criminal activity that has been going on. Nobody disputes that. But God hasn't done anything to punish anybody. God has given no wraths, no plagues, no natural, not even a tornado that has hit the Vatican. Nothing. I mean, literally, God has done nothing. Yet, there's for some reason, God gives a shit about people being gay and will send a Category 4 hurricane to over Tampa or something because of it. I'm just trying to help me try to understand why God is being so complicit in one but angry in another.
And let's not forget this either. And I don't want this to be lost because I think it's important going back to the complicity thing. And that's why I asked this question ultimately for this reason. This is not the only example of how some of the policies and the way that the Catholic Church does things is harming people. Millions of people in Africa are dying from diseases that can be prevented solely because the Catholic Church has a stance on contraceptives and condoms. To me, that alone is enough not for my money to go to that organization. There is no difference, in my opinion, between the Catholic Church and the Mafia. No difference.
And you got to admit, Pragmatic, the fact that they don't have they actually actively go against having condoms. I understand the stance from abortion. I do get the arguments there, right? But to say don't use a condom and then have people dying of AIDS and people having HIV and other sexually transmitted disease and birth rates that are astronomical by having kids that they can't afford, do you not think that alone would tell somebody you probably should not give to this organization that's promoting something like that?
Okay, I'll respond to this very succinctly, although I'm sure this will provoke a reaction just because this is a larger discussion that's a little, that would require some more getting into. But my simple response is I don't understand why it's so hard for people to just abstain and not have sex, but
biology.
In lieu of a larger conversation.
Biology. It's simple as that.
We'll have that conversation in the after show.
Yeah,
I have a conversation.
But it is biology. All right, let's get some more super chats here. I'm going to try to get some in order here. 0132132, $10.01. Can he or anyone else give an example of an entire school district that repeatedly covered up child rape for decades? And by the way, I'm going to point out, when you're talking about the rubber room, that is for tenured professors because it is very difficult to get rid of tenured professors. However, some things that tenured professors can get removed for are sexual assault and things of that nature. So if they committed any one of these crimes that a priest would have done, they could be fired. But the rubber room is basically for teachers that are awaiting some kind of trial, right? But it's not that the church, not that the schools is covering up, right? They're not saying, we are covering up a crime, we're going to move this teacher to another room. No, the church moved them to different parishes, and they did not tell the parishes that they went to that this person had the problems in the prior parish. They literally went out of the covered up. So it's a false analogy to try to compare what's happened in schools and rubber rooms to what happened in the church, okay? So, but the question is, have you ever seen an entire school district that repeatedly covered up child rape for decades?
For decades, I'm not aware of any specific stories, but I know there are school districts who have indeed covered it up. I can find some stories, perhaps another time, but because I don't have them offhand, but there are certainly schools who have done it. And just may I respond quickly to the, rubber room comment?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. I would just say that, rubber rooms can be used to just move teachers around to. Teachers have been moved around in similar ways to priests. It's not always when they're just awaiting trial, although, yes, it is used in that situation as well. So it can be used in a broad range of circumstances.
Sure. Can you give me – would you estimate a real quick maybe percentage of how many teachers compared to how many priests?
I can't say specifically.
This is your own opinion here.
I'd say
less, statistics. Less than 1%?
No, I wouldn't say it's less than 1%. Really? I would say it's closer to something like maybe between 10 to 15% based on some of the other numbers I've seen. But again, this is probably...
That's a lot of teachers.
I'm probably overshooting a bit too. Yeah, well...
Yeah, I think you might be overshooting. Yeah, that's a lot of teachers. Okay. Mr. Cook J, $5. Is he also weary of religious bias in Congress regarding gay rights? And I think this may go to the question of oversight, because you were concerned about an oversight committee having bias toward the Catholic Church. And understandable, I get that. But the question then goes, what is the better way to look at this? Would you rather take a chance in having an oversight committee with slight bias, or do you want to not protect the kids? Which one would you prefer? Now, you said you would capitulate on that point, and you were fine with an oversight type committee, right? But you did express that a concern for potential bias. Fair enough. But you do think that having the committee or having some kind of oversight does more good than harm to the church, because they are protecting the children. And you know what? We know the church can't self-police themselves. Even you have to agree their self-policing has been horrific. So would you support an oversight committee?
Yeah, no, I still broadly support the idea of an oversight committee in lieu of certain specifics that might weigh me towards another opinion, possibly. But yeah, I think it's better to – I don't think being over vigorous in the search of rooting out priests who have committed these crimes is a wrong thing. It just, you know, let's make sure we're getting priests that's guilty, and we're not just, you know, going around accusing priests in an attempt to vilify other Catholics and things like that. That's it, pretty much.
Yeah, I you don't want to falsely accuse people. But so you do agree that there is religious bias in Congress regarding gay rights, though, too, right? I think we all agree that there is some kind of bias there.
Sure, there's bias, although I think the question – yeah, all right.
I think that's kind of a given. The Godless Eye went $2.
Did you want to take a second real quick, Godless Training, to respond to that?
No, I agree.
Let me know.
No, I'm fine. Yep, okay, that's good.
Okay.
All right, Godless Eye went $2. Stop giving and let God take care of it. And that's a good point. Look, if this is supposed to be, you know, God's church and everything, why does he need so much money? I mean – I don't see him actively doing anything in either regard, either promoting the church or fixing these things. And it's really disconcerting. And I think even pragmatic culture, you're going to have to agree that even you haven't seen any kind of divine intervention going on. Nothing.
God works through people is one of the things that has to be kept in mind here. And I would say that there are examples, say the Vinyajo testimony, things like that.
Ways.
Well, hell no.
But you know, But you just said the church is the people, or church is not the people. You can't have it both ways.
Exactly.
Is the church independent of the people, or is it the people? Because now you're defaulting back to the people. It's like when anything good happens, it's the, you know, the church. When it's bad, it's the people.
No, no, no. Okay, I understand the miscommunication.
We need to wrap up.
Allow me to clarify. Okay, I'll make this quick. The church as a moral authority in terms of its ethical teachings are beyond the people, but the church is still comprised of her members, but she is not necessarily, but being that she is not just the people, she is also the ethical and moral implications of the church. She is, in terms of the moral and ethical implications, she is sort of immune from popular opinion. But when it comes to, you know, institutions of like, you know, when the people are corrupt, she can work through the people. It's not impossible for there to be bad apples and good apples in the church at the same time.
Garbage. Right. If the church was more than its people, then if there was no people going to Catholic churches, there'd be no Catholic church.
Yeah, exactly. It is the people. The church is comprised completely.
And you said
of the
she.
People,
you said she in reference to. You said she in church, reference church. To the church. Let me just go ahead. It's 2018. You don't know what the church's pronouns are. I don't think it's
the church is not binary to go down there. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Right. I got to tell you. I think it
could be something else.
I think that if you're using the church for your moral guidance, you don't have any moral guidance. And I think that people that are using things like that for their morality are not very moral people to begin with. I honestly do believe that. You do not need to look to an organization that has so much corruption and then call that your moral guidance. That's to me completely absurd. I mean, that I don't know how you can even say that, man. I'm not trying to dog on you, but when you bring up morality and you're saying that this is the paragon of virtue, that this is the moral center that you're looking towards for your own morality, you got to be out of your mind. I mean, just come on, really?
To get into that would be discussing very long, sorry, so perhaps for the after show.
All right, fair enough. Bram SL one. All religions exploit a failing of human mind that allows for belief in things without evidence. And one more. Mark Seidel, $5. Good news. There are independent Catholic churches. I found one by RC, Roman Catholic. Just Google independent Catholic churches. So
it's an option I was unaware of, but it's a good one.
Okay.
Might be, right? Might be.
All right, perfect. Well, I want to thank you guys both. That was a fascinating, albeit frustrating, talk at times. The lens in which you look at this situation, pragmatic culture, I believe is a little glazed over. And I hope that you take away from this and think about some of the things that, you know, have been brought up, because it's just hard to stomach some of the points that were made, in my opinion.
I understand completely. I think it's, you know, again, it's a dialogue on what must be done and where guilt lies and who it lies with. And that must be an ongoing conversation. I'm just against, you know, I want to try to find blame in those who are truly worthy of it and not try to implicate more than necessary. But I think this is the closest we've come to ever having a dumpster fire with me on the show. So, where we haven't gotten there yet.
You did well. No, I mean, okay, you're doing great, but I mean, you know,
you don't know what a dumpster fire is, my friend.
Yeah, exactly. We actually happen to like you, right? So, I mean, you know that none of this is personal toward you, because you're not an idiot. You're articulate. You're educated. You don't have the same dumb fuckery that we get from an actual dumpster fire.
It's to the mafia.
We'd rather talk to somebody like you. What's that?
I want that dumpster fire.
It's to the mafia that he pays.
Yeah, that's the issue that I
oh yeah, the dumpster fire award. That reminds me. Let me throw that out there.
Yep.
On the 25th of November, we are having the first ever Golden Nuns, and basically, it's going to start this Wednesday. We're going to open up voting. You'll go to a forum. We'll have the categories there. You'll enter in whoever you want to nominate, and that will go for. I think I'm going to run it for the first month, and that will give us time to contact the top four people in each category, let them know when the show is and how it's going to go. And that way we can actually have them be a part of that show. But we're going to take your top four submissions, and those are going to be the people who are nominated. We'll release the nominees a week beforehand, and that's this Sunday after Thanksgiving. So you'll be ready, I think, after several days without us to come in and have a little fun. So Godless Cranium said he wants that golden dumpster. So if that's the case, go and vote for him. But I'm going to let you guys wrap up now. And once again, plug your channel, anything that you've got coming up and where people can find more of you. And we'll start with Pragmatic Culture.
Cool. Thank you guys for having me on again. It's always real here, so I enjoy it a lot. Again, Twitter at Prag Culture for low effort memes, and Prag Culture, Pragmatic Culture YouTube channel for somewhat higher effort streams. That's it. I'm good.
Godless Cranium.
Okay, I could be found on my YouTube channel, Godless Cranium, or at the Heathen Hour podcast, which is also on YouTube as well as on Spotify and all the iTunes and all the regular places that you'd find a podcast. That's it. I can be found on Twitter. Thanks for having me on. Thank you, Pragmatic, for having this discussion with me.
Always a pleasure with you.
Thanks for joining,
GC. Absolutely. And $2 super chat. Go Rams!
Absolutely. And guys, like I said, we will... No.
I'm not a big fan of the Rams.
I'm kidding.
Don't know. Yeah.
Join us tomorrow. If you're not going to join us for the after show, join us tomorrow. Ideology. Jilly Juice will be here. She is the lady that you might have seen on Dr. Phil. She sells a concoction of cabbage juice, salt, and other wholesome ingredients that does a wide variety of things, from curing cancer to regrowing limbs. And we'll find out tomorrow if she can back up the claim that it will cure the gay, because apparently her formula will straighten out whatever is rainbow inside you. And we'll find out. And like I said, if you want to participate in the clinical trial that we're going to do, I'm going to drink the juice, and then we're going to put up dick pics and see if I still respond to them. So if you'd like to donate yours, this is for science research purposes, of course, not for anything sexual, please do that. And yeah, we'll see you in the after show.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.